Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back in. Hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic, intern Will here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Going to have Corey Curtis from News 2 coming up at 8 o'clock for his weekly visit. So looking forward to that. Chase McCabe at 9:30. Taking your thoughts all show long on our text line as well. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. And Joe, we are a couple of weeks now into Titans training camp. Preseason officially beginning this week as the Titans travel to take on the Atlanta Falcons coming up on Friday. And before we know it, the regular season will be here. And what I would call maybe the most anticipated Titans season in a couple of decades taking place. Coming up here in just a few weeks with Arizona coming in week one, we're off and running at that point. Obviously, John Robinson and Mike Vrabel have both, when you factor in the big picture, they've both done a very good job up until this point. John Robinson, and I think it's easy maybe sometimes to forget if you're a Titans fan, exactly what this team was when John Robinson took over. It was not good. It was a dumpster fire. It was one of the laughing stocks of the NFL. And pretty quickly, that changed. I mean, they got to a point early on in John Robinson's tenure where they were competitive, they were winning games, they were competing for playoff spots, and now the challenge is, how do you go from getting into the playoffs to doing some damage in the playoffs? So let's start with the J-Rob part of this conversation. We'll get to Vrabel coming up here in just a few minutes. As you evaluate everything that's transpired over the course of the last year, you've won an AFC South. We know how bad the defense was a year ago. We've talked so much about it. Obviously, the moves that have been made this offseason with Adoree Jackson and Malcolm Butler and Jonnu Smith and Corey Davis all out the door. Julio Jones now in here. Obviously, Caleb Farley selected in the first round. All these different things that you factor in to the equation. How much does John Robinson have riding on this season? Given the fact that, to me, going out and getting a guy like Julio Jones signals that you feel like your team is right there and right on the edge of being competitive and being able to compete for a Super Bowl. How much does J-Rob have riding on this team in the window that they're currently in with Tannehill and Henry playing the way they played the last couple of years?
Well, it's a huge year for him. When you talk about anyone in this league having stuff riding on it, I mean, it doesn't take long before people get to is fill in the name on the hot seat.
Right.
And that's not at all to me what we're talking about. But you know, this is sort of, I mean, it's 5 years in and it's built up to this. As you said, it's the most anticipated team. I've been told, you know, maybe 2009, you could look at that going into that year, which ended up being a huge disappointment, by the way. So people probably don't want that to be brought up a lot. But
probably not.
But after the 2008 division championship, 13-3 and all that stuff. But I don't – I mean, look, just in terms of how this team compares to the rest of the league and just the possibilities with some of the guys on this roster, I mean, it's – I think you can make a case for 20 years-ish. And so that's – I mean, look, it's all a credit to John Robinson. The stat that I, you know, have been keeping track of here for about a year, I mean, well, he's 47-33. He's 3-3 in the playoffs, so – three teams have a better record and more playoffs wins while he's been here. The Chiefs, Pats, and Packers. Now, of course, they also have championships. The Chiefs have one. The Patriots have two. Well, sorry, the Packers don't have one. But
thanks for that.
Yeah, sorry. And also, you're talking about like 60-20 for the Chiefs. I mean, they're not in that tier, but it is. I mean, that's kind of impressive that there's three teams, you know, ahead of them and when you look at it that way. But it's also, you know, look, you're talking about Isaiah Wilson, first-round pick, and you're talking about Jadeveon Clowney and Vic Beasley last offseason, And now this offseason, I mean, the second round pick right now, not going to, you know, overreact, because certainly Dylan Radunz could end up being a great player for 10 years in this league. I can't say anything I've seen says there's no way that happens.
Right.
But right now he doesn't look ready to really compete at this level and be an asset on the field, and that's a second round pick for a team in a window of winning. So you think about a first-round pick at right tackle last year, a second-round pick at right tackle this year. The investment in that position, man, like, you need to get some payoff for your second-round pick.
Yeah.
I mean, you can say that for any team any year, but I think especially when you go out and get Julio Jones and you're doing the things to, you know, you're kicking the can down the road a little bit, you're trying to figure out a way to, you know, to make that move right now. Man, the second round should yield you a player who makes you better. And right now, it doesn't look that way. And again, let's give Radunz some weeks here and some time and see if that can change. You know, I'm not far from, you know, giving up on him, but it doesn't look right now like he's going to be hugely impactful this year unless people get hurt ahead of him. So I think the what's riding on it for John Robinson is obviously, you know, the final outcome is the final outcome. That's on his record, good or bad. But specifically with some of these acquisitions, you're taking some risks or you're maybe reaching a little bit. I mean, even Des Fitzpatrick right now, I don't see him contributing this year.
Yeah.
Fourth round pick. Caleb Farley, now that is looking better right now. And there's a lot of, you know, it's these big, the high draft picks that you spend, and, of course, the money you spend. I mean, if Bud Dupree comes in and is great this year,
yeah.
Well, okay. That looks better. I mean, that's being a GM in this league. I would say that it's really interesting that the overall picture is so good, and yet the specific to him, some of these moves recently – kind of make it feel like there's more pressure on him than maybe there is.
Agreed. And look, I don't think that John Robinson is in any danger of losing his job. I mean, I think he's done a very good job largely up until this point. But it is interesting, like, where he's at right now with Titans fans. Like, we were talking about a first-round pick, and this goes back to the Julio Jones discussion. Like, would you be comfortable giving up a first-round pick? And there are some Titans fans like, well, I mean, yeah, J-Rob's going to screw up the first-round pick anyway, so you might as well just give up the first-round pick, which is not a way to operate in the NFL. We all know that. But it is interesting that the overall picture, the last couple of years especially, has largely been very good. But then there's so many individual moves along the way that if it goes the wrong way, like if Bud Dupree comes in this year and he's not effective and he is not worth anywhere near the 16 some odd million dollars per year that you're giving him. I mean, that's another bad look for John Robinson after Clowney and, you know, all the stuff we went through last year and talking about the pass rush. Like, you can't say it's for lack of trying. I mean, he's trying. He's bringing in Clowney. He's bringing in Bud Dupree. He brought in Vic Beasley, much to, maybe that one, the hesitancy immediately with a reaction on that one. But he's trying to address these things. But sometimes, I mean, right tackle, obviously, he's trying to address that. It's just not working out so well right now for the Titans in that regard. So it's interesting to me, and part of the reason I brought this question up, of the overall picture is still largely very good with this team. But there are some parts that up until this point, John Robinson hasn't really been able to figure out all that much. And once that starts to go the other way, and starts to affect the bottom line, I don't think it's going to take very long for the opinion on him to shift with the Titans fan base. So it's a big year for him in that regard. Like, he needs Julio Jones to come in and work out. He needs Bud Dupree to come in and work out. He needs Caleb Farley to come in and be able to give them significant snaps as a first-round pick. He doesn't have to hit on everything. That's, I think, an impossible standard to hold a general manager to. But I do think that there is a high level of importance that should be placed on the big moves that John Robinson made this offseason. They've largely got to work out, because if they don't, you're just wasting a year of a window of Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry that you don't know how long that window is going to last.
Right. And again, Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry, John Robinson acquisitions too.
So, sure.
You know, you always have to keep all that in mind as well. Like, the good things are also moves that he made. I would, but it just, it could be better. Like you say, like they're good, and if just this or this or this were different, they could be better, right? I also think you have to look at the moves on what the information was at the time. I mean, some moves are going to work out great, some moves aren't. That's how it goes. But
yep.
So I will always look at Clowney and Beasley differently. I can't blame him for trying with Clowney based on the information available. I can blame him for paying Vic Beasley $9.5 million when no one else appeared to want him, including the team that drafted him.
Right.
And the trend was so downward. Like, that to me is a bigger problem than Clowney, who even this year, after last year, was, you know, everyone wants Clowney. You know, I mean, that was, I think, a worthwhile gamble. I think Julio Jones, maybe he doesn't work out and he's hurt this year and doesn't do anything. I still say good, worthwhile gamble. I can't even, with Isaiah Wilson, the information that I understand was available at the time, it wasn't much. There wasn't much indication of the issues that he would have here. So even that one, that's a huge hole. But even that one, to me, it's a much bigger risk that you drafted Caleb Farley this year. I mean, we've seen some teams that have come out there and say the medical was terrible.
Yeah.
So when that happened, to me, at the time, information available, that is a bigger issue. Now, right now, it looks like that one may go his way. Who knows? It looks good early. So it's what you knew at the time that I think has to be kept in mind with some of these moves. Bud Dupree, I think, is another one where, like, again, I would look at Clowney and say that made – I know people are going to laugh at this, but, like, at the moment, I liked Clowney better than I liked Dupree this year with the huge deal coming off an ACL with a guy who is a good player, I think maybe a very good player, but, you know, has been part of a defense that kind of guys feed off each other and is like a great pass rusher on the other side in T.J. Watt. But we'll see. That one's got to work out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're paying somebody that much money. That's got to be something that works. You start to get in the business of throwing all that money around and not getting a return on that investment, I mean, you're just going to be in a tough spot as a team. And look, and the salary cap, I realize, was the driving force behind this. But, I mean, you've basically overhauled your secondary, and you got a lot of young guys in there right now. You've got Jenkins, and I realize that he's a good player to have. Other than that, you got a lot of young guys in there. Like, it's got to work. Like, you've got to find a way to get those guys on the field and to get production out of them. Because, again, this window, and I know some people have thrown it out there, well, it's a two-year window because you've got Julio Jones and Derrick Henry, and maybe it is. But my guess would be, like, the best version the Titans are going to see of Julio Jones is probably this year. That's my guess. I could be wrong. But just based on age and the way people go, my guess is it's probably going to be this year. So to me, that's the window, is this year with Julio Jones and Derrick Henry. It's the NFL. I realize people can get hurt and things can change very quickly. But I don't think you can bank on, if you're a Titans fan, the next 3 to 4 years, this team just being right there in the thick of things in the AFC. Just based on what the way the roster is set up and the age of some of these guys.
Right. Yeah, I mean, look, it's certainly possible Julio Jones could be really good this year and next year. And
he could play well until he's 38 years old. I have no clue.
Yeah, and a few, you know, maybe like a Raiduns figures it out midseason this year, and then he's really good next year. I mean, we saw Nate Davis go through his rookie year, and eventually by the end he was really good. I mean, so maybe then, you know, the 22 team could have everything. But, yeah, you have to look at it like this year. And you need to be right. Just from the Robinson perspective, you need to be right on your second-round pick from last year. You need to be right on your third-round pick from last year. Right now, that looks like that is easily by far the worst draft John Robinson's had. But the second and third-round picks, there's still a lot right on those guys, and they could make it look better, and that would definitely help this team. I mean, especially the especially to me, Fulton, who I think has looked good in camp, but you know, he needs to take a big step.
We'll continue the conversation on the Titans when we come back and switch gears to Mike Vrabel. How much does Mike Vrabel have riding on this season, and how much of that revolves around two moves in particular that he made this offseason? We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tune in to Nashville Sounds Baseball tomorrow as the Sounds begin a six-game road trip against Louisville, the AAA affiliate of the Cincinnati Reds. Nashville Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9, presented by 312 Pizza Company and Farm Bureau Health Plans. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic, intern Will here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, discussing the Titans, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We've discussed John Robinson and what he's got riding on this season with some big moves made over the offseason. Now switching the discussion to Mike Vrabel. And, Joe, I think in order to do that, you've got to go back to when Mike Vrabel was hired and the reasoning that he was brought in. Obviously, Mike Mularkey was here, and it's very rare to see a team fire a guy that gets to the playoffs and wins a playoff game for the first time in over a decade at that point in time that Mike Mularkey was here when they won against Kansas City. They move on from Mularkey. They bring in Mike Vrabel, and the thinking being there is a different level that this team has got to get to. The offense at the time with Mariota as the quarterback, a lot of discussion around Terry Rozbiski, his offensive coordinator. Vrabel comes in the first year, misses the playoffs. Second year, finds his way to the AFC title game, and last year wins a division. So the early returns have been very good for Mike Vrabel so far. But he still was hired to bring this team more success in the postseason. So with all that in the backdrop, and then factoring in a couple of moves made this offseason as well, officially naming Shane Bowen the defensive coordinator and keeping things in-house, going with Todd Downing as offensive coordinator. Joe Rexford, how much does Mike Vrabel have riding on this season, and how much of that kind of boils down to those two names that I just brought up in Todd Downing and Shane Bowen? Obviously, we've talked about those guys a lot. Vrabel, very comfortable with Shane Bowen. Very comfortable staying in-house with Todd Downing as well. How much of how we view Mike Vrabel and the job he does this season is going to boil down to Shane Bowen and Todd Downing?
Yeah, probably a lot. I mean, again, with Vrabel, overall very good. And you're talking about, some postseason success. He had a couple wins in his second year, got to the title game, wins the division last year. So overall, been very good. I don't have it in front of me, but I believe he had the best start. He bested, or maybe he tied Jack Pardee for the best start for a coach in, after a certain number of games in franchise history. Yeah, it's been very good. But the coordinator thing, I think, is definitely, that's what's amazing about last year is for all the success they had, that was such a dominant theme, how bad their D was, and then also – the fact that, there was no coordinator named, all that stuff. So, yeah, I think the coordinator choices are huge this year. He's very much a keep-it-in-house guy, which I think I understand the value to that, but I also think there's value in getting new ideas and bringing in high-performing coaches to be your coordinators.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Chris texting in, what's crazier than firing Mularkey is hiring three coaches in a row named Mike. Now, I will say, it wasn't three in a row. It was Mike Munchak, and then I know a lot of Titans fans want to forget about it.
Don't forget
but
Ken.
It was Ken Whisenhunt. Old Ken Whisenhunt in there, and then Mike Mularkey and Mike Vrabel. But, yeah, a lot of Mikes around here lately.
Yeah, but, yeah, you cannot forget Ken.
I'm sure a lot of you would like to.
Ken W. Sounds like it was a wonderful display.
Oh, yeah, you missed out on that.
I forgot about that. I just missed the whiz, unfortunately. But yeah, with Vrabel, I mean, it's look, if it's – I mean, because Downing has been here, obviously, elevates him from tight end coach. And, obviously, the last time Vrabel did that worked out awfully well. Arthur Smith was tremendous. Todd Downing, now it's – it's his opportunity with this stacked offense. One bad year as an OC in Oakland. And I take with a grain of salt people I know who, like if we get Fitz on here, probably, you know, go off about Downing that year.
Yes.
The OC gets blamed for everything. I'm not saying that there's not, you know, fair blame to be placed in a lot of situations. I mean, it's a really tough job. It's a really important job. It does seem like that team had a lot of issues, and it all combined together, and maybe he wasn't ready for the opportunity. I don't know. But
namely, Derek Carr didn't look like the same guy. That was the year after he had basically the same injury Marcus Mariota did.
On the exact same day, yeah. Right, and they both didn't look great the next year. One of them did win a playoff game, though, you might remember. His name was Marcus Mariota.
It was inspiring.
Yes. He caught his own touchdown pass. But
they got deflected by the defender. But, yeah.
Yeah. That was a lucky play. He actually did make some big-time throws. I mean, he's throwing the winning TD pass to Eric Decker. So, you know, give him some props.
That's true.
But
great job, Marcus.
Yes, there you go. See, you're coming around. You know, I just – like, Bowen is a – it's funny because Bowen, again, is just like, yes, having the title's awesome. Being the actual DC, it's huge. Seems to make a difference. But those choices are obviously a big part of this year. You know, those are incredibly important jobs. And so if those, you know, either side struggles, I mean, then you look at, okay, why didn't you, you know, look at like Terrell Austin is like a really accomplished DC or – you know, could you have gone out there and brought someone in with some fresh ideas for the offense? But so far, I mean, again, the big elevation he's made internally after the stunning hire by your favorite team of Matt LaFleur,
yes,
was definitely a case of no KYP, know your personnel.
Yeah.
Like, we were all like, Arthur Smith, can he call plays? Well, that was a good choice. Now we'll see if he's made two other good ones. I'm willing to give Bowen, you know, the year of, okay, you're now the DC. Now it's on you. Let's see.
I have to, and to Mike Vrabel's credit, I mean, it's not been perfect from a decision-making standpoint, but on the field, I feel like he's been pretty good in terms of in-game coaching decisions. And sometimes has been a flat-out genius. Like him running Josh Kalu out there last year to get the intentional too many men on the field, which ended up saving the Titans about 45 seconds of clock time. I think in the Texans game, you come back and you tie that game up, then you win it in overtime. Like, stuff like that. I mean, that's just genius-level stuff that he's been able to pull off. Screwing with Belichick in the playoff game, I mean, that was awesome. It was unbelievable to watch. So, you know, there have been some doozies now and then. I remember back a couple years ago, while they were making that run to the AFC title game, some of the decisions on fourth down early in that year garnered a lot of criticism from Titans fans and Titans media alike. So it's not been perfect. No coach is going to be perfect in those decisions. But I do think largely on the field, Mike Vrabel's been pretty good in terms of his in-game decision-making.
Yeah. I mean, the 19 season kick, don't kick, or what, you know, trick play here, you know, double reverse.
Other than Brett Kern.
That will live in infamy. I mean, there was a lot of stuff that was, I think, rightfully second-guessed. But I agree with you. I mean, look, clock management is one of those things that all of us sitting there, you know, chewing on a hot dog, watching the game, we can't figure out any of this other stuff, you know, personnel groupings or whatever, but we can all count and watch the clock. And there are so many coaches who suck at it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's inexcusable. And Vrabel, beyond what you're talking about, using some of the loopholes to his advantage, I think in terms of having a feel for – okay, you speed it up here. Oh, you want to be careful and not leave too much if you go three and out. Like all those, I think for the most part is excellent in that way. And that's underrated because there are some really good football coaches who cannot seem to understand math.
Oh, it's bad around the league. It's at times.
I don't want to rip on Les Miles any more than he's already been ripped on, but
I mean, come on. Like,
he might be the king.
He might be. When we come back, we'll get into a little college football. Joe Rexroad taking in some Vanderbilt practice the other day. What stood out from Vandy's first couple of days of practice? And we'll continue to talk about Clark Lee, the challenges that he has heading into this year. Maybe a boisterous Clark Lee the other night as well. All that coming up Next, this is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Got the Rex Rant coming up at 7:45. Joe Rex Road's weekly rant takes place every Monday at 7:45. Corey Curtis at 8 o'clock to talk Titans, so looking forward to that conversation coming up at the beginning of next hour. Right now, talking Vanderbilt. Joe Rex Road, Vanderbilt opening up their practice for the fall. I believe last Friday night was their first practice on the field for the Commodores. You were there in attendance. A little bit of a later start for Clark Lee and company on Friday night under the lights over at Vanderbilt. What were some of your takeaways from the first practice that Clark Lee put together as head coach of Vanderbilt officially the other day with fall camp?
Yeah, and they're doing the night practice thing. So that's pretty much, as I look ahead here, the next at least week. I guess Saturday they've got an earlier one, but during the week, at least for now, they are doing it at night. And it's all open, so they're opening up practice, which is great to be able to have a feel for what they're doing, and just see how it looks different. I mean, one difference that strikes you from Derek Mason to Clark Lee, Derek Mason practices, his voice was booming throughout the practice, and I mean, he got after it. D Mace got after it.
Oh yeah.
It was interesting, and that's one thing I thought of, like, early on. Like, Clark Lee is like addressing everyone, and he's just kind of like calmly, okay, we're gonna do this, all right, here we go. Then they do the drills and go through all their different things, team, and all the different situational things you do. And I was like, man, that's different. But at the end of the practice, obviously Clark Lee, and this is something that happens a lot in football, first day of practice, everybody's not sprinting from one station to the next.
There's
some sloppiness, there's some lack of focus, whatever it is. Coach gets after his team, but Clark Lee got after him. I mean, I was like, oh, okay. it's just one of those things, and this is certainly, I mean, I think probably the case, even with coaches we consider to be mild-mannered, at times, you're going to yell at your team, right?
Sure.
Yell at the player. But it was still a little bit like, wow. He got after, and then after the practice, I think I asked him something about is that intensity that they've seen, and he's like, well, I'm intense every day, but intensity doesn't necessarily equal volume. This was intensity plus volume, so that was interesting to see.
It's a good way to put it.
Yeah, he's intense. It's just normally pretty even keel, but. Yeah, got after him. The quarterback stood out to me. The receiver stood out to me. I mean, I think that's the best part of this team easily. Ken Seals, Mike Wright, I think they both look really good out there. Mike Wright, to me, is a guy you want to be involved somehow. But Ken Seals, I don't see anything that makes me think he's going to lose his starting job either. He was, in 7-on-7, he was really good. And they've got some, they've got some really good receivers. I mean, Cam Johnson, like Will Shepard, kind of like the star of the spring game, stood out to me again. The guy has speed, and he has an ability to accelerate quickly, to get to top speed quickly. So I like what I see there. Javion Marlowe is gone, so they're thin at running back when they're thin in a lot of places. And it's hard to know defensively what they're going to have this year, but they will, I think, entertain with the passing game this year. And it's going to be really interesting to me to see, does Mike Wright, last year was a red zone guy. Does he have a Taysom Hill-ish kind of role? Do they use him at other positions? And can he really make a run at Ken Seals? I'm not counting that out right now. I don't see any reason to think Ken Seals isn't taking another step too.
Well, and it's interesting from a scheduling point of view. This is kind of an intriguing schedule for Vanderbilt, especially when you start looking at some of the out-of-conference games. You start with ETSU, and then on the road at Colorado State, at home against Stanford as well, and then UConn to close out the non-conference schedule. A couple of interesting games in there when you talk about Colorado State and Stanford as far as the non-conference schedule is concerned, and then your crossover opponents are the two Mississippi schools in conference play this year. But from a scheduling standpoint, those are not easy games, those two non-conference schedules with Colorado State and Stanford. ETSU and UConn on a little bit of a different playing field, but Stanford and Colorado State, absolutely a challenge for Vanderbilt non-conference.
Yeah, I mean, that's a possible 2-2 if you look at that. Now, Colorado State's not good, but no. You're still going on the road. I mean, that's I just realized this now that you're saying this. That is a 9 o'clock start, huh?
Yeah, man. Buddy, come on.
10 Eastern time. That's like Pac-12
after dark, baby. Come on
for the doors, yeah. So that and that is that. Guys, what is that? Is that the night before the Titans opener? It is. So stay up late, watch a little Vanderbilt football, and wake up.
Rondale Moore coming in.
That's right. Wake up to Rondale Moore. You know, but Stanford's not great either. I mean, Stanford is getting worse as a program, but that's still a tough team coming into your building. So, yeah, there are definitely easier Vanderbilt non-league schedules that have existed than this one. And the league schedule, as you said, it could be worse.
Yeah.
The fact that you've got the Mississippis from the West, I mean, it could be way worse. You don't have to deal with LSU. You don't have to deal with A&M. You don't have to deal with Bama, Auburn. I mean, so from that perspective.
The crazy pirate coming in here.
That's right. A coach who should have lost to Vanderbilt and Derek Mason last year absolutely should have lost that game. You know, South Carolina, obviously, you know that's an East opponent. You know you're going to play them. But, I mean, you go through this schedule, I mean, it's not totally out of the realm of possibility for Vanderbilt to find 6 wins. You probably have to win all 4 or at least go 3-1 in the non-league. You got to probably win at Tennessee.
Yep.
But could you beat Mississippi State? Could you beat South Carolina?
Winnable games, I think, on the schedule. I mean, Tennessee thrown in there as well.
Yeah.
But those are the winnable games SEC-wise, I think, for Vanderbilt. I mean, you could look at Ole Miss. I think Ole Miss's offense is just going to be too much.
And I just think back to last year when they played Ole Miss. And I know that
Elijah Moore had 400 yards.
I know he's not there anymore, but my gosh. Talk about
that was something.
Oh, an eviscerating of a defense, and he was incredible. And apparently, he still looks that way in Jets camp, by the way. So, but yeah, I can't get with that one at Ole Miss. I can't buy that one. I can buy it Tennessee. It's both of these teams in this state. A lot of questions, a lot of things that could break their way, but also could go the other way. And then at that point in the year, as always with those two teams. How many key injuries does one side have that maybe the other side doesn't have?
Real quickly, as we wrap up this segment here, I do think it's appropriate to mention the passing of Bobby Bowden yesterday at the age of 91 years old. Obviously, a fantastic coach at Florida State. Probably an even better human being. I got the honor of watching Bobby Bowden one time come to a local church in Hendersonville and just speak. And just the priorities he had in life and how much he loved his family, how much he loved his players on the field. I mean, it was palpable when he was talking. So, obviously I wasn't a Florida State fan and didn't watch. It wasn't like I was watching every Florida State game every week while he was there, but a legend in the college football coaching world and a guy that lived a great life in Bobby Bowden, 91 years old. Tough to see him passing over the weekend.
Yeah. I mean, he's one of those people who have a certain public persona. And by all accounts, it's exactly who he was.
Yep.
So you got to really appreciate that. And we had Steve Spurrier on last week. And, it's funny because we love Steve Spurrier. He's great. But at that time when they were going head to head, I feel like most of America loved Bobby Bowden.
Yep.
And like, that's the nice guy you want to win. And then that trash talker over on the other side.
Yeah.
It's rest in peace, Bobby Bowden. And he's one of those guys who just universally seems to be loved in the college football world.
When we come back, time for the Rex Rant. Joe Rexroad's weekly rant coming your way up next. Taking your thoughts as well on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN, 102.5 The Game, and the Game Nashville app.
Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on, go play.
And it is that time of the week, time for the Rex Rant, here on Robbie and Rex Road, each Monday at 7:45. Joe Rex Road lays it on the line, throws it all out there. A little Smash Mouth bringing us back in, which I love that song.
Do you think I don't like that song, Michelle?
No, I just clicked one of the Rex Rant ones I haven't tried yet, and I love that song. So I was like, we're going to use this one. But you like Smash that Mouth song?
Now I'm happy. I have no rant. I just want to say life is beautiful.
Nate texting in on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Rex Road, this goes without saying, but if you need some motivation this morning for the Rex Rant, as Crispy always said, bring the passion. Terry Crisp, always about bringing the passion here.
Thank you, Nate. Thank you, Nate. Well, I'm going to bring some. Here's the thing. You guys have to be honest with me. I may be going to the well too much on this.
You do whatever you want.
But look, I mean, all I can do is react to things that happen in my life, right?
Correct.
And how they affect me. So I'm going to go back to October of 1987.
Okay.
You know, I had many, many chores. We all had many chores in the Rex Road household.
It goes down or a the whole Rex, different new set of nicknames that we don't want to get into.
Or the Rex Hold. Yes. Yeah, well, yeah. So, you know, my dad made sure that we, you know, my dad and mom made sure that we, you know, did our chores. We had like a chart. We mixed.
Ooh,
so
a
I
chart.
Had, yeah, I like yeah, that. Yeah. So I had the car. We had a sweet Dodge Caravan. So wash it, you wax it, but also, so it, you know, the tires have these little white walls, you know? And so, like, my dad was very particular. He was very neat. He was extremely organized. He was an Army guy, and he was, you do things this way. It's this way or the highway.
Right.
You know? So these white walls, you take a Brillo pad, and you're just scrubbing them. And so the Tigers and Blue Jays were playing that day in a huge game, and it was on national TV. We lived in Virginia. It was a huge game, and, I mean, my heroes, the Detroit Tigers, and I just wanted to watch the game. And so I timed it out to be done. Ah, come out here. Look at this. These white walls in the tire, like any little speck of dirt, you got to get it off. I mean, he brought me out like three different times. Nope, still not good enough. I remember this because I was just like, the Tiger. So I finally – but you know what I did? I shut up. And I did it.
Yes.
And I did it again. And then I was done, and I watched the end. I got to see Kirk Gibson hit a huge two-run homer in the ninth to beat the Blue Jays, and the Tigers went on to win the division. But I shut my mouth and did the chore, okay?
Correct.
So all we're asking is, okay, like if you have laundry as a chore, it does not take much time to fold laundry.
Correct.
And then bring it to whoever has the clothes or the dishes. It takes a few minutes a day to do the dishes. And then they don't pile up and you have a massive pile. And glasses don't break as they did over the weekend. And we don't have a situation where you look in someone's room and clothes that should have been folded and given to other people are crammed in places. Like, you actually took the time to hide clothes and cram them in parts of your room rather than just do what you're supposed to do. Like, what takes more time? Does it not take more time to think about, where can I find a hiding space for some clothes that aren't mine so I don't have to fold them?
Rather than just folding
them. Just fold them and give them to people.
Yes.
But the last thing I want to say on this, because, yes, again, if I'm going to the well too often on this.
There's no such thing as going to the well too often on this.
I want to hear from parents of teenagers, because I'm told that no other parent out there has their kid do chores. I'm told that.
You're it.
I don't know any of my friends who do chores. So I want to know if this is true. If you are a parent of, you know, anyone, I don't know, 9, 8, 9 and up probably.
Yeah.
That's about, I think, 7, 8, 9 sure. and up, teenagers. If you have them do any chores, let them. And if you don't, let me know. Maybe we are mean outliers who ask our kids to do crazy things like fold some laundry, do some dishes, oh, can you sweep the front hall? Can you vacuum the family room? You know, 10 minutes a day, maybe 15 minutes a day, and you're done, and you move on with your life.
How do you think that kids today would respond to you having to wash those tires? Do you think that that would go well today?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Is it really that bad? I mean, it's demanding, and there's supposed to be a benefit to this, which is that you learn about discipline, that you learn about responsibility. You know, you're going to be moving on into the world. I mean, look, I'll be honest. When I moved on to college, I wasn't, you know, always the most organized or clean person.
No.
You know, lived in a college house with a bunch of guys.
Yes.
You know, we had some issues keeping things clean. But there's still, I think, at some point it kind of clicks for you that if you do things the right way, you know, go show up to things on time.
Yeah.
Do what, have responsibility. It will benefit your life. I think there's a value to this, which I've tried to explain that to, and apparently that's also bogus.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Got a text that says, I'm 22 years old, and by the time I was 7 until about 17, I had to do chores.
Did it benefit you?
That's an
extensive
period.
My question to you is, was it good for you? Did it help you?
Nate texting in, I always fold my laundry while watching TV or something. It's not that hard. I do dishes when a radio or TV show isn't on. So when Nate's not listening to us, he's doing some dishes.
I mean, if you do dishes every day, they won't pile up.
Correct.
But if you let it go for a couple days, then it's like, oh, got to do the dishes. They're terrible. If you had done 5 minutes of work yesterday, meanwhile,
you save yourself.
My text line, Dane from Nolensville, says my 9-year-old unloaded the dishwasher this morning. There you go. So there's a parent I know.
That's right.
Who has kids do chores.
Rob from Clarksville texting in. My 4-year-old has chores. Nothing crazy, but that boy is going to earn his chicken nuggets. The 2-year-old picks up his mess, too. This coming from Rob in Clarksville.
Yes, Rob.
No free
yes.
chicken nuggets in this household, for God's sake.
There you go.
Get in there and you earn those.
You think you want a Capri Sun? Yeah. Well, throw your diaper away.
Let's go back to the text line. Matt from Camden texting in. Every time I tell my 8-year-old to do something, it's, why? And you're so mean. I feel your pain, Joe. So you're not alone in that front.
Yeah, well, an 8 is, I mean, I think 8's about the age.
Yeah.
I think it's in that range, you know, where it's when it's realistic to actually have, like, something that you need done in the house and think that an 8-year-old could do it okay, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't even gotten into the fact that, like, our lawnmower is broken. So that's off the chore chart.
Right.
Right now, while we're paying people to cut our grass till we get it fixed, which is my fault for not having it fixed by now. But I mean, it's been an easy little stretch.
Right. They've had some time off here. I mean, yeah. we're not that far away from lawn mowing season being done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But hey, let's cram some laundry.
I've done that.
Have you really?
At home?
Just hiding laundry.
Okay, so I'm definitely a culprit of it because when I was a teenager and had to fold laundry, I would just shove it in my closet and shut the door. And then nobody could see it, so nobody would know. Mom wouldn't know. But now I look back at it.
Other people's clothes.
Yes, everyone's.
Michelle.
But now I look back on it, and I'm like, if I just folded it, it would have been a lot easier. But when you're a teenager, you just think, oh, this is the quickest. I'm just going to shove it in there. You don't think about later in the day or down the road and dishes. But now, living home during COVID, chores came back again, you know. 24 under the parents' roof, and I've got high school sisters who... They were better than me when I did chores, yeah. So shout out to them. But, yeah, they just, when you're in high school, you just don't want to do them.
Did you get in trouble? Like, did your mom, like, find the crammed, hidden clothes at any point?
Yeah, she would find them. I don't think I would really get in trouble. But looking back on it now, it makes you realize, like, when you go to college and you have to do your laundry and all that stuff, nobody wants to live with somebody who's messy. Your friends, when you're living with your friends, nobody wants to live with you.
Right. And when you move out on your own, maybe it helps a little bit that you had to do that, right?
Yeah.
100%.
Melissa from Gallatin texting in, I have 3 teens, and they all do chores, including doing their own laundry since they were 11 years old.
Good for you.
So you're not alone.
I'm keeping receipts here. I got to write all this down.
Steve from the borough.
Home.
I have an 8, a 10, and a 14-year-old, and they all do chores. You're getting a lot of reinforcements here.
I mean, I want to hear from someone who doesn't have their kids do chores.
Chris in Nashville. I have a 17-year-old son who refuses to wear pants and will not comb his hair. Yeah. 17's an interesting age.
The refusing to wear pants.
I did have hair
thing.
Yeah, at 17. I did put on pants, though.
We've had, you know, hair discussions. We've had put some clothes on discussions.
The mullet. So. The mullet hairstyle. Doesn't your son want a mullet?
Well, that, well. Yeah, he needs a haircut badly. Yeah. But then again, I asked for a rat tail, so.
That is true. I got a texter that says, this coming from Craig. When I was six, I asked my dad why I had to do laundry, and he said 6 years ago he got tired of doing laundry, so now I'm here.
there you go.
Maybe that's fair. Maybe that could be your response. Why do I have to do this? Well, you know, son, I'm just tired. So you can do it.
That won't fly. I'm trying to say this is for your benefit. And other people have their kids do it. I'm waiting to hear from somebody who's like, no, no, we're cool. We just let them go to school and, you know, play video games.
Keith texting in with another nickname. Fidel Castrode coming for you.
God.
Oh, man. Plain Joe texting in. I have 5 kids. Ages range from 3 to 12. They all have daily chores outside of keeping their bedrooms clean. There's a whole list of extra jobs around the house and yard, aside from normal daily chores, that they can do to earn allowance/spending money for whatever they want. It builds self-worth and pride and work ethic.
Well said. And we've kind of tried the, you know, rewarded versus penalized route, but seems like penalized is the only thing that registers. And then at some point, like, you know, if you run out of things you can take away, you know, what do?
You will sleep outside tonight.
That's an idea.
Gwen texting in, are there advantages to required chores? Absolutely. Kids learn so much more from that. Good for you, Dad, and glad you respect it and appreciate it. Talking about your father. There you go. Much more.
You all have made me feel very good.
Let's say, this has been a very rewarding experience of the Rex rant for Joe Rex.
This is the tree of
trust.
He's
in a much better mood.
I feel better now. Thank you. So now, next time we have a confrontation, I've got
receipts.
People on my side.
That is correct.
Thank you.
Joe, we'll clip this and we can show it to your kids.
That's right.
Yeah.
That is today's
edition. I was hoping they were listening on the way to school. So
hopefully it timed out well for you. That's today's edition of the Rex Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road every Monday at 7:45. When we come back, we'll be joined by Corey Curtis from News 2. We'll get into all things Tennessee Titans with him. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.